you right now, but I am obviously with the jam-packed program. I got a great lineup for you guys today. So more to discuss in just a bit. You know, we didn't get to all of the State of the Union best of moments, and I'm trying my very best to make sure we do. It was incredible, obviously, President Trump highlighting the victims of a lot of these crimes that have been committed, these heinous crimes. And it's all thanks to the policies of those on the left. And this is the problem. You know, if these individuals, these politicians who push these radical policies were the ones who were held accountable, if they were the ones who were sued after all of this, well, then we wouldn't have these crimes because they would be like, all right, well, we can't chance it. We can't chance it. But they don't have a problem with blood being spilled in this country. If it's not on their dime, they don't really care. They don't really care. This is all about the invasion. This is all about transforming this country into the globalist agenda, the WEF agenda. And they just don't care as to who dies in all of this. And that's just the harsh reality that we're currently working our way through. President Trump highlighting a lot of key players, a lot of key victims in all of this. I have to say one of the most impactful moments, though, was watching the president talk about the illegal invaders who have been given CDLs and how them gaining these trucking licenses, being able to go out there and to operate these semi-trucks has been absolutely devastating for the American people. We've had dozens of casualties because of all of it. And I keep asking, by the way, the Transportation Department to give me the number. I say, give me the actual statistic on how many Americans, even during the Biden years, were killed because of these illegal invaders getting these CDLs. And still, the Transportation Department will not respond. Don't know why, probably because that sounds like a lot of work for them. But I think it's one of the more important things that we should be highlighting all of this. But President Trump also highlighted, and this was a key element to a lot of what happened yesterday, President Trump also highlighted the Somalian fraud. And I enjoyed that because, well, they panned over to Ilhan Omar when they were talking about it, and her face says it all. Take a listen to clip 10.
The Somali pirates who ransacked Minnesota remind us that there are large parts of the world where bribery, corruption, and lawlessness are the norm, not the exception. Importing these cultures through unrestricted immigration and open borders brings those problems right here to the USA. And it is the American people who pay the price in higher medical bills, car insurance rates, rent, taxes, and perhaps most importantly, crime. We will take care of this problem. We're going to take care of this problem. We are not playing games. Delilah.
Okay, Rashida Tlaib looks like a man. And by the way, she's wearing an F Ice pin during all of this. She is a garbage human being, just an absolute garbage human being. Whenever I see her face, I just want to puke. What a vile human being. She obviously hates this country. She's obviously sent here because she's a radical Islamist. And she wants to destroy this country, just like her little buddy over to her side. Ilhan Omar, another horrible human being who is sent here because she hates this country. We have been infiltrated at obviously a federal level, but also local government as well. We have been infiltrated by Islamists who are trying their very best to destroy this country. And to conquer the West is their ultimate goal. I mean, you don't have to sit there and say that it's a conspiracy. We have the evidence. There's tons and tons of pieces of evidence, reels, videos, pieces of documents that they put this in. They are here to conquer and destroy the West. Why? Well, because our way of life is obviously the best. This nation was founded by Christians, and of course, they're looking to destroy just that. They have conquered, obviously, Europe. They've conquered, obviously, other places as well. And right now, they are laying down their battleground. Millions of Muslims have been imported post 9/11, and we are currently working our way through all of this. They're doing their best to destroy this country, and so many are afraid to come out and say the truth. The reality of it is Islam doesn't belong in the West. It has no part in the West. They cannot assimilate to our way of life. They are just here to destroy us. And again, they're always saying, oh, those peaceful Muslims. Don't say that, Brianna. If you're reading the Quran and if you're committed to what you see in the Quran, there's no way that you could actually be peaceful. You, in fact, will turn on us at any moment. And they're just waiting for that. They're waiting for the opportunity. When they are the majority, they will come after us. They do so in all countries that they become the majority in. And those in the West need to wake up and realize something and realize it quick. We are about to be conquered by people that hate us. And those people have infiltrated our federal government, our local governments, and they're building up Muslim compounds throughout this country. Wake up, America, before it's too late. All right, we got more to discuss in just a second. Don't go anywhere.
I'm an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and analysis and a futurist and a father and a guy that loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer, it just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night, to quote Waylon Jennings.
Waking up America one narrative at a time. Brianna Morello is live on the American Journal right now on band.video and x.com.
All right, wake up, America. Got a lot to discuss on today's American Journal. Welcome back. It's been a crazy, crazy couple of days. Excited that you're all jumping on board with us today. You know, I like to keep my eye on a lot of stories that the mainstream media won't tell you about until it's too late. So I do my very best to look at what's happening all around the country. And you might have forgotten about this, but Ken Silva hasn't. There's jury selection going on this week, and it started, of course, it kicked off in regards to the alleged hire by Iran. It was the Trump assassination plot, as many of you guys know. Well, the individual who was arrested for all of that is about to have his big trial kick off very, very soon. Joining me to break down the very latest is Ken Silva. He is the editor over at Headline USA. And if you don't follow Ken on X, you're really missing out because he's the only journalist who dives into these documents, who keeps his eye on all of these big cases that everyone just keeps forgetting about. So make sure you follow Ken on X as well. Ken, thanks for being here. I saw this was just you talking about this. I don't see anyone else talking about it. But the trial did kick off this week. So I wanted to hear the very latest from you directly. So give us an update.
Yeah, I'm really surprised. I'm even Googling this morning and I don't see any media coverage of this. And this is the trial of the guy who was actually arrested on July 12, 2024. The case was announced about a month later. The date was the day before Trump was shot in Butler. And when the DOJ announced that they arrested this Pakistani guy who was allegedly working for Iran and in a plot to assassinate Trump, I think a lot of people assumed, like, of course, this had to be related to what went down in Butler. But when you look at the charging papers, it really looks like this was some kind of orchestrated sting operation. And we even had a whistleblower tell reporter John Solomon that they actually let this Asif merchant guy into the country in April 2024 under what's called significant public benefit parole program, which is basically when they try to flip somebody to become an informant, or if they just let him into the country to kind of monitor him and see who he's networking with. The whistleblower specifically compared it to Operation Fast and Furious, where the ATF was letting illegal gun purchases go down on purpose to track where the guns were going. Well, they introduced this guy when he got into the country to an FBI informant. They recorded all his conversations, and they eventually hooked him up with two undercover FBI agents who were posing as hitmen, and he scrounged up a couple $1,000s, made a down payment, and then they arrested him on July 12th, alleging that like this is like a very credible plot, a very credible threat to, you know, the front runner to be the next president. And so he's been sitting in solitary confinement at Brooklyn Metropolitan Detention Center ever since then. He hasn't really been able to access evidence in this case. Much of it has been classified. He's not allowed to review the recordings of the undercover FBI agents because they say he might leak it to Iran, even though there's intelligence reports that the defense has gotten their hands on that says that he has no known associates in the U.S., So it looks to me as something similar to the Whitmer kidnap plot, where they're alleging that these militias are trying to kidnap the governor of Michigan in 2020. But it turns out that half of the people involved were either informants or undercover agents. And I've gotten a little bit of a pushback in covering this case. They're saying, well, hey, the difference between the Whitmer defendants and this guy really wanted to kill Trump. He came to the country specifically for that purpose. And my argument is that that may have been the case, but the government was monitoring him before he even came into the country, and they let him in. And then they were focused, the FBI was, on building this elaborate sting operation. And while they're focused on this, they totally missed the ball when it comes to Thomas Crooks and Ryan Ruth. So I think that's my point, is like, while they're manufacturing one case, they missed the real would-be assassins.
Yeah, and Ken, I think you're being very nice when you say that they missed it. I mean, it's hard for me to understand how they would miss something. They obviously didn't like President Trump. We saw them trying to lock him up and put him in prison for the rest of his life. So maybe this was the easier way out for the government at the time. And I think that's like a key point to all of this. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Because that's actually another key element to the story, is that about a week before the Butler shooting, the Secret Service gets intelligence from the FBI that there's an Iranian threat. Well, that intelligence was fabricated out of this merchant case. But the point is that because of this intelligence, the Secret Service, you know, one would think that they should have been more focused on upping the resources and the protection that Trump received. So that's another question, is like, if the Secret Service was getting this intelligence, then why was protection and security so lax at Butler?
Yeah, no, that is another key element to all of this. And that's what's so frustrating, because, again, we still don't even understand exactly what happened and why there were so many failures that day either. And, you know, thank God that President Trump was obviously safe. But obviously there were other people who were shot and one who did lose his life. And so we can't sit there and pretend like everything's okay now, because it's not okay. People need to lose their jobs over this. And I still haven't even heard of any reforms being made by the Secret Service after this took place. So that in itself is really, really frustrating to hear. I did see, though, your tweet that you do believe that this individual is going to be convicted. Do you think the evidence that they have is damning enough that there will be a conviction here?
It's just like a really uphill battle to claim entrapment. We saw with the Whitmer case, which was probably even more egregious in terms of the FBI's conduct. You had the informants driving around the defendants, mm-hmm. and half of those guys were still convicted. And it turns out that apparently this supposed Iranian agent did confess initially to working with somebody in a supposed plot. And the government's saying they might introduce this evidence if it comes to that. I guess there was like discussions of a plea agreement, and that eventually it was scuttled and he'd rather plead not guilty and go to trial. So I think there is kind of a legitimate case against him. Of course, he never had the ability to actually pose a credible threat to Trump, and he shouldn't have been let in the country in the first place. So even though he'll probably be found guilty, I just think this is a total misallocation of resources. Because again, you know, Trump came within millimeters of having his life lost.
Exactly. And that in itself would warrant, I think, massive reforms. But unfortunately, that's not the case. Still to this day, Ken, I want to get to this other story, because you actually mentioned it in your open as well. Fast and Furious, and in one tweet that you posted, never actually ended. And this one's really important to me, because I've spoken to people like Cheryl Atkinson, reporter who was obviously covering this, and she was targeted by the government for exposing Fast and Furious. You've detailed in a bunch of documents that you put together, it's quite the enlightening. Again, this is why you follow Ken on X, but the enlightening thread here, you're making the argument that Fast and Furious has actually not ended. Give us the latest on that and what you're learning.
Yeah, I was inspired to make that tweet because the Mexico's defense secretary recently said, you know, amidst in all this chaos with them taking out a cartel leader and then the cartels retaliating, I think bombing cities, committing mass shootings. Well, the defense secretary said that 80% of guns seized from the cartels down there come from the United States. And liberals have used this as a cudgel to bash legal gun owners and bash the Second Amendment. But of course, a little history lesson is due. Most of these guns, I would contend, come with the sanction of the U.S. government. Specifically, there was something called Fast and Furious, which had the ATF specifically allow straw purchases for the cartel. So somebody who could legally purchase a gun like myself would go to a gun store and buy maybe 15 AR-15s or something, and those would wind up in the hands of the cartels. And I think the best resource on this is a book called Deadly Path by an ATF agent named Peter Forselli, who blew the whistle on this operation after a Border Patrol agent named Brian Terry was killed in 2010 by a weapon that was let walk by the ATF. Forselli said that in the late 2000s, he would have ATF, or he would have gun stores calling him saying, hey, you know, some Mexican guy with Sinaloa plates just came in here, bought, you know, a couple dozen ARs. This is very fishy. And Forselli and the other ATF agents would pull the guys over, confiscate the weapons, but indictments were never handed down. Like, nobody was ever actually charged for this. And he says that the DOJ prosecutors would explain to him that, well, the nexus of crime is in Mexico, so we really don't care about these cases. Of course, it all turned to disaster in 2010 after the Border Patrol agent was killed. You had all this information come out that the ATF was doing this for years. I mean, it started in the 90s, according to an FBI informant whistleblower named John Matthews. There was something in the George W. Bush era called Operation Wide Receiver, where, again, they were letting guns walk to the cartels. And Forselli will tell you that to this day, after he blew the whistle, he was kind of walled off from the case. And he doesn't really know why the ATF or the DOJ was doing this. It could be a combination of corruption, people getting paid, or I think probably the most plausible reason is the DEA and the ATF had a deal with the cartels saying the main cartel, El Chapo's cartel, the Sinaloa one, like, if you inform on the other cartels and help us arrest people, we'll give you guns and we'll help you establish a monopoly. And so that happened mostly in the early 2010s. You fast forward to 2023 and Chuck Grassley wrote the letter that you just showed on the screen, revealing that it was still going on up until the late 2010s, where you had an ATF investigator was taking guns down for the cartels using a government car so he wouldn't be arrested. Finally, I guess somebody tipped off the higher-ups at the ATF about this activity. But instead of arresting this guy and making a big case out of it, they handled it as an administrative matter and pretty much let the corrupt agent quit with the severance package. And so, you know, Chuck Grassley, to his credit, he wrote a letter about this in 2023, but nobody ever followed up. And so one can only assume that this type of nefarious activity is still going on.
Yeah, well, we can only assume that. And I'm going to read later on to our audience a new CIA document that we've obtained that actually went up on the web. And it's been declassified for a couple of years now, but we just recently obtained it. And it's interesting because it's another big conspiracy proven to be correct in regards to the CIA and MKUltra trying its best to control the minds of Americans by drugging them up. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, no, none of this surprised me. Obviously, our government is a bunch of corrupt, treasonous pigs. And so it's not surprising, but none of these individuals are ever held accountable. Canada, as you know. So there's that, at least. I want to shift over to somebody who I think is actually, I mean, I know it's very controversial, but I think to someone who's actually someone who loves this country, Jack Teixeira is an individual who's now sadly sitting in prison right now. He's the individual who leaked a bunch of government documents regarding Ukraine on Discord. Now, he's a young man, which is really unfortunate for him, but you actually recently, he's sentenced to 15 years in prison, but you actually posted something that broke my heart about him. He's currently sitting in a Supermax prison, and it's actually one of the toughest prisons in the country. I don't know why he would be there. This is, again, a kid. He's 24 years old. But when I looked into, you know, where you said he was, I mean, this is a really, really hard prison to be doing time for someone who is a peaceful individual, obviously doesn't have a violent past. But he did expose the fact that we weren't being told the truth about the war between Ukraine and Russia. So give us a little bit of backstory on this.
Yeah, poor Jack. This is the National Air Guardsman who, in late 2022, by all accounts, he was kind of just hanging out on a gaming server called Discord, chatting with his friends. And I think he wanted to impress them a little, so he started leaking documents that he got from work. And these were really damning papers that we still have questions how a young kid had access to this in the first place. Probably the most significant disclosure is that kind of the whole Ukraine war at the time was a sham. Remember, we were hearing all these stories about how Ukraine was beating back Russia and things were going really well for the West and we could actually win this and maybe even take back Crimea. And the documents Jack was showing really proved otherwise, showing the heavy casualty numbers. He also revealed that U.S. troops were on the ground in Ukraine, which was not known at the time. And another scandal he revealed is that the U.S. was spying on Zelensky, which isn't too surprising, but it was still to have it proven was a little bit shocking to read in black and white. So he's arrested in early April and sentenced to, I think, 10 to 14 years. And he was in a maximum security prison, which is, you know, pretty much bad enough for I would consider pretty much a whistleblower. I did see he gave a interview to ABC News a couple months ago where he says, "I don't really regret what I did. I exposed government malfeasance. And if it saves one life, one Ukrainian or one Russian, then it'll all have been worth it." And I got to suspect that that's probably what spurred the transfer to Florence Supermax, which, as you say, it's the harshest prison in the world. This is where you're sitting in a small solitary cell for 23 hours a day. And when you're let out for 1 hour of recreation, you're not congregating with other inmates. You kind of go to this outdoor area that's connected to your cell, and you can kind of just walk around in an outside cage that's also small. It looks like a, if you go to a dog pound, it's like a dog cage. You walk around before you go back inside. This is the home of like El Chapo, Ramzi Youssef, Oklahoma City bomber Terry Nichols. Like, this is supposed to be the worst of the worst, but we're seeing increasingly political prisoners and whistleblowers are being sent there. He's probably a couple cells down from Adam Fox, who was set up in the Whitmer kidnap case. Another Whitmer kidnap defendant, Barry Croft, is also there. So it really seems to be a punitive thing where they're just trying to scare people from becoming whistleblowers, in my opinion. And I guess if there's one silver lining to this is he will get out in about 10 years. So he'll probably be around my age when he gets out, and he'll have the rest of his life ahead of him. But who knows the scarring and the PTSD that he'll have to face, because I would argue that he's pretty much being tortured right now for his disclosures.
Yeah, and I think it's absolutely egregious. And I understand that you can't leak, obviously, classified documents. That's actually the reason why I never want to work in government. I've gotten offers to go work in government. I will never work in government because I always go, well, this is the ethical thing to do. The American people need to see this. And I would do something like what Jack did. And so my sympathy is with him significantly, because we were being lied to, still are, about the war between Russia and Ukraine. And so I could only imagine, if you love this country, if you love just humanity as a whole, and you don't want to see a war like this continue to drag on, you would, in fact, go out there and put those documents on the web, and you would try to highlight the corruption that's going on behind the scenes. So my heart breaks for him. And as you just highlighted, too, you know, this is the part, Ken, and I'll let you kind of react to this too, because I'm really upset. You know, last year, it's actually been about a year now since I spoke with Ed Martin on air. And during our interview, I asked Ed Martin about those two individuals who are also being held at Florence, which is, again, the toughest prison that we have in this country right now. The two individuals who were part of the Whitmer kidnapping plot, the alleged Whitmer kidnapping plot. I asked Ed Martin specifically, are you looking into pardoning those folks? Because they were obviously set up by the federal government. And Ed Martin understands the case better than anyone, of course. And he said, yeah, you know, this is something that we're looking into. That interview went viral. We got Whitmer to even comment on it because she saw it and she apparently became infuriated. And she said she spoke with President Trump. And she said that President Trump also responded and asked her specifically, are you okay if I issue this pardon to them? And she said no, that she wants these men to stay in prison. And so we haven't heard much in the way of movement on that. President Trump still has not commented on any of this. Ed Martin since has lost control of the weaponization group. They've actually dissolved that, it looks like. And they've just placed him on just being the pardon attorney. And they've kind of relinquished a lot of his power, whatever was left of it. And it's really unfortunate. But, you know, your takeaway from this, because this administration hasn't made whole with a lot of the political prisoners and they are still being tortured. Again, the DOJ runs the Bureau of Prisons. So they're being tortured by the DOJ right now.
Yeah, it's just really unfortunate for these guys. I don't have a whole lot of hope. I mean, you could just look at the administration's actions and see that they are seem to be more focused, unfortunately, on transferring Ghislaine Maxwell from a high security prison to the cushy Club Fed, where she's kind of like in a camp. She gets to eat, steak for dinner. She gets to go to the gym while everybody else is on lockdown. And that, of course, she was transferred right after she gave an interview that kind of said, well, hey, Trump did nothing wrong. And it really raises questions about whether a quid pro quo was at play. And so I don't have a whole lot of hope. I mean, Trump, he also pardoned, I think, a drug dealer from Honduras. His priorities seem to be really misplaced. I think the best we could hope for is maybe, you know, the last month he's in office. We could probably try to kick up a public relations campaign and lobby for these guys, and maybe he'll sign some pardons on his way out. But he seems to have other priorities at this point.
Yeah, it's frustrating because, you know, I tried reaching out through another reporter to see how the two of those men were feeling after they heard the interview with Ed Martin and myself, and they were very hopeful. So it breaks my heart that we got their hopes all worked up and they thought that possibly that the president was going to entertain freeing them after they were set up by the federal government under the Biden regime. And unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case. And it's just really frustrating. Again, none of these people being held accountable. And it was a setup from day one. Ken Silva, you're doing incredible reporting. We're very thankful for you and the time you extend to us by appearing on this show. Folks, head on over right now to his X page. Give him a follow. I'm telling you, it is the best Twitter account, one of my top Twitter accounts on X. And that's how I stayed ahead of the news cycle as well. JD_cashless is where you could find Ken Silva at right now. And he's the editor over at Headline USA. Ken, thank you for joining us. As always, you do an incredible job. So we're honored.
My pleasure. Thanks again.
Thank you, as always. Folks, we're going to be covering more in just a little bit. Obviously, I just told you about the CIA document. I can't believe it. It is everything we've told you about. It's even pre-MKUltra. So this is going to be crazy when we talk about that in a little bit. We're also going to be talking about what happened in Mexico. Jorge Ventura was on the ground, and he was doing some incredible reporting as the drug cartels were trying to get even with those who went after their leaders. So Jorge Ventura will be joining us in just a couple of minutes. So buckle up. There's more to discuss. In the meantime, though, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com right now. Why? Well, because we have a flash sale going on. When you buy methylene blue, it's 25% off, and then you get methylene red, and it's also 50% off. So it is an incredible time to head on over to thealexjonesstore.com right now and indulge in this flash sale. Of course, guys, when you support us and you keep us on air, well, you're also supporting your own personal health. It's a very fair exchange, I must say. Help us win this information battle. Head on over to thealexjonesstore.com and make sure you stock up today.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said,
This was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one, and the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic-based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new product, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take this, it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else it's doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it and support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason one way or another we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalist. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to The American Journal. Got a lot to discuss in today's show. We're diving into so much. Welcome aboard. All right. Well, if you guys were watching last week, and I know you were, I was filling in for Alex Jones, and I had on a very interesting guest. This individual is the assistant director of the office of drug czar Victor Avila. And well, he dropped a little hint bomb, and I didn't realize until I actually went down in Mexico. But I was asking him specifically about the Mexican president and whether she was working with this administration, what it's been like with her, because there was obviously a lot of public issues back and forth. And then he dropped this gem in clip 12. Take a listen.
I could tell you, I worked in Mexico and my career, and you mentioned what I went through. And I could tell you that I've seen Mexico do a lot that I had never seen them do before. Seizures, arrest, sending and extraditing people to our country. But nevertheless, it's not enough. They have to up the game because these cartels have taken a stronghold, especially in Mexico. They basically control the movement of that country, especially when it comes to the money and the power. So there's a lot more to be done there. But at least the cooperation is there. I know that our law enforcement partners now with the Department of War. And why is the Department of War involved? Because remember, these organizations are now declared foreign terrorist organizations. We're talking about terrorist organizations. So when you start combining all these other efforts and our tools that we were never able to use before, now not only in Mexico, outside of Mexico, on the border, I was with the Director Carter in El Paso, Texas, and met with our military partners there in Department of War. So it is coming together. It's hard to do it. You know, I think people want to change immediately. It's happening. It's going to take some more time. There's a lot of diplomacy involved as well in dealing with these countries, but you're going to start seeing some significant improvement.
Ah, significant improvement. What did he mean by that? Well, probably that this administration was going to force Mexico to go after their drug cartels, and it looks like they did just that. Joining me to discuss a man who was on the ground and was doing a lot of incredible reporting over the weekend and throughout the week. Please welcome to the show, Jorge Ventura. He's an incredible independent journalist. You could find him at Ventura Report on X as well. And I highly recommend you do just that. He goes to all the most dangerous places, whether it's, you know, Mexico or whether it's a BLM riot or so much more. He is on the ground. And he's doing incredible work. Jorge, thank you for jumping back on with us today. It was impressive to see your reporting on the ground there. And obviously, things were getting obviously very heated. What's the very latest in regards to the cartels in Mexico and how they've been pushing back? Jorge, I think you might have frozen us. Let's say we'll get him back in.
Am I back?
Oh, no. I think, is he back to being frozen, guys? I'm waiting for the control room to get
me. Am I back?
I think you are. Jorge, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me on.
You're frozen for a second.
I was mentioning that I think Mexico is still feeling the shockwaves of the takedown of El Mencho. I was reporting in Tijuana, Baja California. Really wanted to focus there because we started to see the vehicle burning, the narco blockades there. Baja California, for folks who don't know, has millions of Americans visiting every single day. I mean, you just go into Tijuana, it's almost half of the population there is just Americans hanging out. Many of them live there now. And this all this footage that we shot is as soon as I crossed in on Monday, literally I crossed into Mexico on Monday, we got tipped off that the cartel was burning vehicles by the border wall, and we rushed to the scene. Once again, cartels trying to send a message, not only to maybe the Mexican government, but by burning the vehicles near the border, maybe trying to send a message to the U.S. government that cartels could retaliate by kidnapping and attacking Americans on either Mexican soil or even in San Diego. I was there also yesterday. It seems like things were a little bit getting back to normal. Some businesses were opening up, but the streets were very empty.
It looks like his audio might be breaking up a little bit. Jorge, I'll have my control room reset with you to make sure that we're getting the clearest report, because it sounds like your audio might be breaking up a little bit. So while they work on that, guys, and just let me know, drop in my ear when he's all set to go. We'll have him just kind of reset there. Jorge's on the ground. He's been bouncing around a lot. So it's probably just bad reception. So we'll bring that to you once it begins again and we're good to go. But again, folks, there's been a lot in regards to Mexico and in regards to all of this. You know, when I was talking to Victor Avila about what was happening on the ground there, he was assuring me that this is actually the most that he's ever seen both the Mexican government and now the Colombian government getting on board and working with this administration. Now, Jorge, when we have him, we'll bring him back in. But, you know, Victor Avila was telling us that as someone who, and if you don't know Victor's story, it's actually a very powerful story. He was somebody who worked previously, he's retired now with HSI. But while he was working with HSI, and this is what a story that he's told me several times extensively, he was actually shot out by the cartels, and sadly, his partner died. And so he understands he understands the dangers here. He was shot multiple times, but thankfully survived. And now he's working with his administration to make sure that he secures what you see him working on now. I mean, he is trying his very best to save Americans from what's happened. And it was quite the enlightening experience speaking to Avila, obviously someone who's a member of the administration now, and talking about how this administration is pushing back on fentanyl and other drugs that are trying to be brought into this country. Now, it sounds like we have Jorge Ventura back on. Ventura, welcome back onto the program. As you were just cut off, sorry by the bad reception, I want to let you continue your thought there.
Yeah, I think right now we're still feeling some of those ripple effects. I think what we need to watch for next is, could we see this cartel violence and retaliation spill over to the United States, where they could potentially attack Americans either on Mexican soil or on American soil? And right now we're getting new reporting. I'm still speaking to some of my sources, but it looks like the new leader of CJNG is the stepson of El Mencho, alias of Cero Tres. He's actually from Orange County, California. He is an American citizen. Many of these new cartel members, the new generation, are actually American citizens, many of them dual citizens. So I think that's a key detail, because that means he has strong ties to Southern California and probably other cartel factions operating in the United States. But right now, Sheinbaum, the Mexican president, is feeling the absolute heat and pressure from the Trump administration, I think in ways we've never seen before. And I just want to quickly mention too, Brianna, I think the cartels truly fear the United States government at this point. And the reason I say that is, while we did see this violence erupt all over Mexico, we did not see cartels actually attack American citizens or even kidnap American citizens. They did burn vehicles, they attacked businesses, and they did block roads, and they cut off public transport. But I think that's a key detail that the cartels truly fear the U.S. government this time around. And I think you playing that sound with Victor Avila was also key, because by designating them foreign terrorist organizations, they're able to deploy tools that they never had before. I think one of the most important moves the U.S. government did under the Trump administration was last year getting the CIA to fly drones in Mexico. I think those CIA drones played a huge role in getting that intel on Amancho's location.
Yeah, and I kind of want to dive into that a little bit, because, like, you know better than anyone about this subject matter. You've actually interviewed a lot of these cartel members as well, and so this is really important. For you saying that, I think that strikes with me. Normally, and kind of walk our audience through this, normally when they would do something like this, because this has happened several times, right, when their leaders are killed, and this is various cartels, when their leaders are either killed or captured, they do retaliate by acts of violence like we see unravel over the weekend. But not going after the tourists that were in the area, I think, was a big one. Walk us through it. Normally, they do grab hostages, and they do look to extract funds in exchange for those hostages. So what have you seen in the past that has you thinking that this is a change?
Well, if you guys remember, it was several years ago, I believe it might have been like the first year under the Biden administration, when the U.S. government with Mexico, they took down El Chapo's son in Sinaloa. And that violence erupted for several days. And that's where regular Mexican citizens were attacked. They were actually kidnapped, and they literally burned the city. I mean, the whole state of Sinaloa to the ground, until El Chapo's son was eventually released by the Mexican government. And it took, you know, under the Trump administration to under Trump 2.0 to recapture El Chapo's son. He's now under U.S. government custody. But I thought that was very interesting. I thought this violence would actually spread out for much longer. Also, it was key that, you know, Puerto Vallarta was attacked. But I mean, that area is littered with American tourists. I mean, they could have literally just captured even one or two, and it would have made major headlines. But we didn't see that same reaction, even in Baja California. Once again, this literally has hundreds of thousands of Americans as we speak right now. They didn't even attack one foreign tourist. So I think the reason is that the cartels know that this is probably the strongest, most aggressive administration they'll ever face. I think Secretary of State Marco Rubio is playing also a massive role. But I think the CIA flying those drones into Mexico and collecting that key intel was a major move. And it's clear that Sheinbaum right now is trying to do everything that she can to satisfy the Trump administration. I think another key detail here to watch, Brianna, is we'll watch the relationship, is that Cartel Jalisco Nueva Generación has strong relationships with Chinese. I reported this actually here on the American side, with these marijuana grows connected also to Chinese organized crime. So Cartel Jalisco has a very strong relationship with China. It's going to be interesting to see if the Trump administration tries to also put more pressure on China and getting those chemical precursors out of Mexico for good.
Yeah. Yeah. And also it's worth noting too, the New York Times reporting that CIA provided important intel for what we saw unravel, like the capture of their leader. So that was something that they were reporting. I think it's really important here. Jorge, what do you think happens moving forward? Because I thought it was interesting. We've talked about this extensively with Victor, but I know for a fact, and many of our audience members are very familiar with this, that no one gets elected in the Mexican government if they don't get the blessing of the cartels. If they try to run for office and they don't get that blessing, they are usually killed. We've seen dozens of those stories over the election cycles as well. Do you think the president of Mexico was working with the United States, possibly from within the United States? They may have offered her some type of level of safety, security, because I can't imagine her going out there and putting her life on the risk on the line for all of this, given the risk that's involved here.
I think that plays a role. And I also think, and maybe this is a little bit out there, I think that Sheinbaum is also worried that she could potentially be arrested by this Trump administration for just allowing this cartel violence to flourish. I mean, it's kind of astonishing to know that they knew where El Mencho was this whole time, but they never moved in. I think there's two keys. There's two sides of the story where we could go, Brandon, is Sheinbaum could continue to crack down on cartels, which I think we'll see. And then we'll see how the cartels react. I think one key thing we need to watch for is normally when a leader also gets taken down, these cartels normally splinter into paramilitary factions. And sometimes we even see more violence because you have all these guys trying to fight for that top kingpin spot. Kind of actually what we saw when El Chapo was taken down. It got splintered into two groups where you saw the side that was more loyal to El Mencho start to fight the side that was loyal to the sons of El Chapo. The thing that I would be really worried here, Brandon, is that the new leader of Cartel Jalisco has such strong ties in the United States, especially Southern California, the San Bernardino, that Riverside area, Orange County. So at any moment, if these guys want to retaliate, they could attack American citizens, kidnap American citizens, or they could even plan a much deeper attack. So I think that's something to watch for, is that this new leader has, he probably has factions all over the United States working, but especially in Southern California.
Yeah, and Jorge, also, it's worth noting, too, I mean, I was the one that broke this story first when the cartels, and this is the Pentagon saying that it was the cartels. This was just a couple of days ago in El Paso when they had to shut down the airport, and they said they were going to shut it down for 10 days. I'll get your take on it before we go, though, of course. But they cited that these drones they had to take down were actually cartel-related drones, which was quite strange to hear. What are your thoughts on that? Because, I mean, again, you're citing all of this, that there's a lot of activity here in the United States, that it's not totally out of the loop to think that they might actually commit acts of violence. But the Pentagon saying that they had to take down these drones and shoot them down, it sounded like. But we haven't heard much in the way of a follow-up on this. And I've been waiting for more details and poking around, trying to get it from sources. But no one's really budging on this one. They don't really have any further details besides the fact that there were some drones, it might have been one or multiple drones that they're citing came from the cartel, that were flying nearby the El Paso airport, and it resulted in them initially saying that they were going to shut down the airport for 10 days. But that's quite strange given the fact that these are commercial airlines going in and out of there.
Now, this story was very strange. I mean, just for folks who don't know, just for context, I mean, I think just passing the 6 months on the border, we've had at least 600,000 cartel drone incursions. So I think just shutting down the airport was a strange move. And the whole story doesn't make any sense. And then it was like shut down for 10 days. And I think it was only shut down for a few hours. So it made this confusion. I think so from some of my contacts, it wasn't a drone. I think they got confused, but I don't know if the administration wants to admit that. But just for some context here, guys, Mexican cartel drones are flying into the United States every single day, probably literally right now as we're talking. I mean, like I said, the last 6 months had 600,000 of them come in. I've been actually embedded with Texas DPS when they spot some of these drones. I've never really seen anything like this. So I'm hoping there's more to the story. Honestly, Brandon, you're way better at this than I am. So you'll probably get the info before any of us. But just from someone who reports on the border, it doesn't make sense at all. Like, the cartel drones is literally like nothing new. So I think there's something more there that we gotta poke.
Yeah, well, Jorge, my sources were kind of floating the idea that they believe that this was actually taking place in a nearby black site, and that is the reason why the federal government's kind of not giving us all the information there. So And I was also told that this actually might not be the cartels either. So there's that. It's always a fun element. Go. But again, I know. It was so strange getting the updates. And again, the Pentagon, I love the people, some of the people who work there who I communicate with. They are great people. But there was a lot of miscommunications at the front of all of this. And it's got me still scratching my head and wondering what's going on. But Jorge, you're on the ground in all of these dangerous situations and doing your best to report as to what's really going on here. And the corporate media won't do that. So folks, give him a follow on X right now. It is VENTURA. Report is where you could find him at right now. Make sure you do just that. Again, we keep independent journalism alive by supporting our fellow independent journalists. Victor, I'm lost already. I think it's last week. Jorge, thank you for joining me. As always, I appreciate you and your patience while I pull my Joe Biden impression right now live on air. So thank you.
No, that's okay. Thank you, Rand, for having me on. Keep up the great work.
You as well, my friend. You as well. Thank you for being with us. Speaking of losing it, it's actually a great pivot for my next story. It's in regards to the CIA. Something that we were told was a conspiracy. Well, it's apparently not a conspiracy anymore. We've gotten our hands on some new CIA documents that have been declassified. Now, they were thrown up on the web. And, you know, I don't think anyone really noticed this. It's a part of a program that was called Project Artichoke. It was run by the CIA even prior to, MKUltra. Hear me out. These declassified CIA documents reveal a chilling blueprint to manipulate the minds of Americans through, of course, drugging them. And they did so. They were floating the idea of doing so through, get this, and it's a document, so we can tell you it's real, vaccines, food, and your water supply. Yeah, no, seriously. Project Artichoke was a top secret CIA program from 1951 till 1956. It focused on behavioral controls and different techniques that they could utilize to go out there and manipulate Americans, ultimately. It was done out of fear, of course, during the early Cold War years of communism. And so they tried brainwashing people, and that was the real goal here. That was what they were trying to do. Again, it sounds like MKUltra, but remember, this started in, according to documents, 1951. It's a 7-page declassified report. We're going to get that up on the InfoWars website as well, so you guys can see it for yourself, because it's very important. But it was titled, this document, Special Research for Artichoke. Again, it's quite the interesting name. Again, it was declassified in 1983, but it just made its way to the CIA reading room in 2025. And again, not many people saw this one, but it's on our radar. We want to make sure to bring this to you. Again, its core goal was to develop methods to control or alter human behavior involuntarily. Keyword, involuntarily. And they did so by using drugs and hiding in food, water, Coca-Cola even, by the way, beer, liquor, cigarettes, and vaccines. Vaccines. Isn't that something? Short-term drugs, of course, were the goal here, and they were trying their very best to create these things and to get it into your supplies. So really, no surprise here. We've been telling you, I know Alex has been telling you prior to my existence about all of this, and it's just another highlighting proof that, yeah, he was right. Again, keep in mind, who were they using this on? And that's the key element here. They were using some people who weren't consenting, by the way, but they were a vulnerable group of people, those who were in prison, military personnel, and those who were obviously dealing with mental health issues as well. So it's all connected, Artichoke, to MKUltra. So keep that in the back of your mind. But this was kind of like the precursor for all of it. So again, it's not a conspiracy because we have the documents to back it up. And in case you want to read it for yourself, it's going to be up on InfoWars.com in just a bit if it's not there already. That's where you could go to check it out. But again, no surprise here. Your government was lying to you and was trying to use vaccines, or I should say vaccines, to manipulate the minds of Americans, as well as food and changing your water supply. So a bunch of scumbags over at the CIA. I think that's pretty consistent still to this day. So make sure you check that one out. All right, folks, I want to shift gears a little bit to Tony Gonzalez. He is the congressman in Texas right now, and there's a lot of pressure for him to resign. Those in Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, are calling for his resignation because, well, the dude's a predator. The dude's a predator. Now, we could say that, and I could say that in my opinion, of course, because we've now gotten our hands on new text messages, which Tony Gonzalez himself will not confirm or deny, but he initially denied the reports that he was sleeping with a staffer. Now, that staffer later committed suicide by setting herself on fire in her own backyard. And we're learning more and more about all of this. But Tony Gonzalez denied the reports initially when he was accused of sleeping with his staffer. But the text messages look like, yes, in fact, he was. And not only was he sleeping with his staffer, but it looks like she wasn't even trying to participate in this. In fact, the text messages really highlight a very concerning issue here that Tony Gonzalez was trying to pressure his staffer to sleep with him. She keeps referring to him as boss and saying that he's taking it too far. And then he asks her very personal questions about what sexual thing she's into. It's obviously very, very disturbing. We'll play a clip of Sarah Gonzalez confronting his staffers in D.C. just a few days ago. But I wanted to play this clip for you because yesterday Tony Gonzalez surfaced over in D.C. and he was asked a very difficult question that he was unable to answer in clip two. Take a listen.
No.
You're not. What do you, are those text messages correct? Are they accurate?
I am not going to resign. I work every day. I work every day for the people of Texas.
But are those text messages, are they accurate? Are those real text messages?
I'm not going to resign. I work every day for the people of Texas.
Did you carry
it? And there will be an opportunity for all the details and facts to come out. What you've seen is not all the facts.
Did you have an extramarital affair with a staffer?
What you've seen is not all the facts, and there'll be an ample time for all of that to come out.
What are the facts? Tell it. Can you address it right now? Your constituents want to know.
My constituents are not here in D.C. My constituents are back home in Texas.
What do you make? What a garbage human being. What an absolute garbage human being Tony Gonzalez is. It's either a yes or no. Yes or no. Were you sleeping with your staffer? Were you trying to pressure her into having sex with you because you are a pervert? Tony Gonzalez can't answer those questions because now he realizes he's in a lot of you know what. He's being challenged right now in Texas. And again, the candidate, I'm not even going to mention his name, although I think he will be a great pick. I will not mention his name right now because I want to focus solely on the fact that Tony Gonzalez was manipulating, according to these text messages, and in my opinion, was manipulating his staffer to sleep with him. And she probably felt like she had to do just that to keep her job. See, this is the problem with Tony. He's asked a very specific question and he can't answer it anymore. Initially, by the way, he was denying these reports that were coming out from Daily Mail. In fact, he also said that it was a political hit job being led by his staffer. Well, folks, we have the text messages. The text messages that now he won't tell you whether they happened or not, whether they came from his home, his phone or not. But it looks like when you look at those messages that those were actually handed over by the phone companies. That's what it looks like. And again, there is an ethical investigation into Gonzalez, but no one wants to weigh in on this. Now, again, Republicans, there's a very small group of them who are calling for him to step down. But the problem is Republicans, because they suck so badly, have a very thin margin in the House right now. So many Republicans won't even come out there and say that Tony should step down, even though it's quite obvious that he's a creep. In clip three, you're going to hear from one of my favorite individuals in D.C., Congressman Tim Burchett, who goes out and says, you know what? Yeah, he actually should step down in clip three. Take a listen.
Do you think that Congressman Tony Gonzalez should resign?
I do.
You do?
And, hey, brother.
Are you confident that if the Mace resolution is referred to judiciary, that it'll...
I don't know what will happen. I mean, it takes so long. The election could be over by then. He loses the primary, and then it's pretty evident what will happen there. So,
got it.
I'm sorry it's going down like that, but we can't stand for abusing women. That's just wrong. I just can't. Good conscience. Go with that.
Got it. Thank you, Congressman.
Yeah, you know who that is? That's a man with morals. And that's the reason why we'd like him here on InfoWars. All right, folks. Don't go anywhere. I'm still fired up and so much more to discuss in just a bit.
So I'm not giving up. I'm not going away. If they shut us down, I got the Ollie Shows Network. I don't know, and I'm going over there. You financed it. You paid for it. Your support. I'm just telling you, here's the weird paradox. I thought we'd be shut down last year. I thought we'd be shut down 2 months ago. The receiver won't let us order new product over at InfoWars.com. So we're in this paradox now where we're winning, and now they're like, well, you'll actually be open in the middle of next year now and all this stuff, and there's no money because people believe it was going to shut down. Plus, there's no product. But I convinced the receiver. I said, can we at least make fundraising posters, which are very low cost, have a high markup, people know it's an investment, to keep us on the air? Can I do that? I said, yeah, you can do that. I can just tell you, we need your support right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Three posters I designed. Two I designed. Rob designed the other one. Defend the West, famous Crusader King. Make no peace with evil, same Crusader King, and then do like that still image of me. And it is the bestseller. It's I've only begun to fight John Paul Jones, and it's InfoWars 1997 to 2000. 26. And yeah, you can buy unsigned for $25, big posters, glossy in a tube, or you get them for $100. You're like, God, that's huge markup. Yeah, it's a fundraiser. Like when commies give NPR $200 for a ball cap, costs $15. That's the whole point. We're actually winning right now. I don't want to count chickens before they're hatched. It's not the Democrats. It's not the DOJ holdovers. They're going to shut us down. If you don't go get these posters and you don't support us, and I'm not bitching at you, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying you got to do it, then you'll be the ones to shut us down. This is a marathon, so please support us, InfoWarsStore.com. I need the money right now. It's like in Star Trek, Wrath of Khan. He goes, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, we're all dead.
Scotty, I need warp speed in 3 minutes or we're all dead.
And you guys have got us out of this over and over and over again. And me, I'm not giving up. We need to keep pushing because we've got their ass.